This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those listening online at TSN1290.ca, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, featuring interviews with Al Muir from Sports Illustrated. He's going to join us in about 30 minutes' time. And then at 10:30 this morning, Willie Donick, Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster on 102.5 The Game Radio in Nashville, is going to join us to talk about the Predators. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. I say good morning to my colleagues Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this Saturday morning. You're both looking quite well. Ezzy, even though you say you're a little bit under the weather, you are looking quite well.
A little bit under the weather, not totally under the weather, just, you know. Sometimes you wake up and you have a bit of congestion, but yeah, good morning, Drew. Good morning, Richie. Enjoying the beautiful summer weather here and ready to talk hockey, just like we do every Saturday.
Did you hit by the hail last night, Ezzy?
No, I didn't hear about it.
You didn't hear about it?
I didn't know there was any.
It was like
a nap
7
yesterday?
O'clock.
I must have slept through that.
Did you
honestly
nap yesterday? Was yesterday a nap day?
I do. You do. Richie, you know that I do like to take my after work naps. So I did. Yeah, I slept between like 5:30 and 7.
Yeah, okay.
So,
and let's talk, because your roof would be a little bit more audible. The hail would be a little more audible.
Yeah, I got
roof.
A metal roof.
So you really must have been sleeping hard.
Yeah. But the thing is, Richie, hail is no match for my snoring. It could be hailing for hours, but I'm not going to hear it.
It's probably a fair point he makes there, you know. It's true. Hail would be no match for his snoring. I happened to be driving around caught in that hailstorm, and it was a pretty good hailstorm. And Richie, if I know you and your Friday nights, you were probably somewhere.
It was a hail of a storm.
Were you on a patio? Getting close to a patio?
Not yet. No, I actually went after that, so we were okay.
Okay, well, there you go. Anyways, gentlemen, without further ado, let's get started. Let's start with the article, Richie, that you wrote earlier this week on IllegalCurve.com. I'll tweet it out right now, so anybody that hasn't yet caught it can read it. It was an analysis of Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff and his trading tendencies.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we know that's been well documented, you know, by us and by others, that he is yet to make a player for player, an NHL player for NHL player trade in his, you know, 3+ years at the helm of as the Jets general manager. But there were other sort of underlying, you know, surprises in that article that I was surprised with, and, you know, why don't you talk about those, and then we can bandy it about.
Well, you know, Drew, I'm not sure if everybody knew. A lot of people, some people knew, but I don't know if a lot of, you know, everybody knew that he hasn't made an NHL player for NHL player trade. And I think that's something to note, because I think that's important for many reasons. One of the biggest things to take from that is that no other general manager over that same tenure had even team, never mind general manager, teams that have changed general managers can say that they've done that. And so I would be concerned. I am concerned if I'm a Jets fan. I would be concerned if I'm a Jets fan, excuse me, about that lack of inactivity in that form. Now, I think you were alluding to, Drew, also the draft picks.
Yeah.
And he's actually traded away more draft picks than he's acquired. Now, it's essentially a wash, but at the end of the day, he's traded away a second, a third, a fourth and a fifth round pick and 2 7th round picks. Now, one of the seventh was a conditional pick and wasn't satisfied. But the point is, he's traded away a second, third, fourth, fifth, and 2 7ths, and he's acquired a second, third, fourth, and a seventh. So for a team that in the last 3 years has been outside of the playoffs but yet not at the bottom of the league, you would think that one of the goals over that tenure would be to accumulate draft picks, to try to give yourself a better chance to succeed through the draft. Clearly, the guys on your roster aren't good enough to be able to make the playoffs, even if you're in a weak Southeast division or whatever it may be for those first 2 years. So I thought that was pretty surprising overall. Even if you want to call it a wash, the fifth-round pick being fairly nominal in value, the fact that he hasn't acquired any more, I believe is disconcerting.
Well, it leads me to ask the question of, I mean, and it's a question that, again, it's been asked before, but what's the plan? I mean, if the plan is to, you know, stockpile draft picks and build through the draft, and we've heard about that, you know, going
they
on.
They haven't done that, though.
That's my point is, yeah. You know, if that's the plan.
Well, the stockpile part.
But they haven't stockpiled. They've traded away more draft picks. Now, they've been marginal draft picks.
Right.
But still, I mean, what, again, you're not making NHL player for NHL player trades on your left hand. You're not actually stockpiling draft picks on your right hand. So the question is, how are you building this team that's, you know, what methods are you using to build this team? Because it's not draft picks and it's not trades.
Well, it's building through the draft in the sense that they're using their draft picks. I think the point Richie's trying to make is they could have built with some more draft picks.
Absolutely.
And the players that were acquired, namely Devin Setoguchi for the second round draft pick, turned out to be a poor trade. And Kevin Cheveldayoff, I think, would admit that himself. You have to admit your mistakes. Just like Peter Chiarelli, I would imagine, would probably admit that the Tyler Seguin trade doesn't look good in the sense that the best player is now on the Dallas Stars. But when you look at where the Winnipeg Jets are going, I think we'd all agree that in the three drafts, since the Winnipeg Jets moved over from Atlanta, I think we'd all agree that there's a lot to like about the drafts in the sense that there are players that are now playing for the Jets or there are players coming up. But the problem is, I think, and the real concern here, and for people that are asking, well, the Jets haven't made a player for player trade. Why is that such a big deal? And I think the whole purpose of this article is to say that I think it's time for Chevy to pull the trigger on a trade because there are certain holes on this team, guys, whether it's lacking an elite center or lacking another defenseman to play in the top four or lacking better goaltending depth. Sometimes you can't always address that through the draft. The draft, as we know, right, takes a lot of time. And yes, we're excited about Josh Morrissey and we're excited about Nikolai Ehlers, but those players aren't going to be able to step into the Winnipeg Jets lineup this year and make this team a playoff team.
Exactly right.
Maybe 2 or 3 years from now, those players can complement players that are already here. And the problem, I think, is you have to admit that at this point, Chevy's biggest moves have been retaining the core of this team that came over from Atlanta. I think we'd all agree that. So you're talking about Brian Little. You're talking about Andrew Ladd. You're talking about Blake Wheeler. You're talking about Zach Bogosian, Evander Kane, even throw in Andre Pavlik in there. But the problem is the core of this team hasn't been able to get this team into the playoffs. So really, what are you looking at? Well, you're looking at moving one of those core pieces to make your team better, right? And that hasn't happened yet.
Let me just interrupt for a second. We'll get back to this conversation. Ren Lavoie, TVA, is reporting the Jets have re-signed Eric O'Dell to a one-year, two-way contract worth $650,000 at the NHL level. He, of course, is a restricted free agent after the season, so it looks like Eric O'Dell will be back either with the Winnipeg Jets or with the St. John's Ice Caps, as they do have the flexibility given that it's a two-way contract. Sorry, Richard, go ahead.
Well, you know, and as he mentions, the retaining the core of this team, but that goes to a bigger point. I mean, Andrew Ladd and Dustin Byfuglien both have 2 years left remaining on their deal. As he mentions, Josh Morrissey and Nikolai Ehlers, either of those guys coming up, they're not going to be playing, at least making that effective, having an effective role on this team when those two guys are under contract. So are those guys re-upping again, or are you trading those guys to acquire picks? And if you're trading the guys to acquire picks, why wasn't this done years ago? I mean, that's the thing. Because if you want to build through the draft, fine by me. If you think you have a discernible edge in drafting, which I can't tell that yet. And everybody blames Atlanta draft picks. Well, there's drafting methods and et cetera. There's still a lot of guys here from Atlanta, so you can't suck and blow there.
Their head scout is still, you know, from Atlanta.
Right. And I don't know, you know, the details of who's where and all that, but I know there's a mix. I'm pretty sure there's a mix, at least, of some Atlanta and some guys that they've brought in. And they've also drafted in the top 15, which is, you know, not that Atlanta didn't. But at the same time, I mean, you're more apt to draft successfully. The point is, either you're going to be a team going to try and make the playoffs, or you're going to be a team that really needs to rebuild. And, you know, to Ezzy's point, if you like the way you're drafting, then add to those chances. Add to those percentages and make a couple trades and add picks. But now when you're doing it, it's kind of like, well, you've waited so long, you've already missed the playoffs for 3 years. I mean, So I don't quite understand it. And his inactivity, everybody says, oh, he's a guy sticking to a plan. Well, is the plan just to be a middling team, draft 9th or 10th, and try and hit a home run with that pick? I think that strategy has a lot of holes in it.
Well, sure, because there's all sorts of other teams around you, I mean, who have a very similar strategy or do more to improve your team quicker. I mean, it's simple. I mean, look, I mean, the Nashville Predators, for whatever reason, has always made parallels between these two teams. Look at what the Jets have done this offseason versus what the Predators have done. And I'm not even talking about Ribeiro and Roy, because Ribeiro and Roy are whatever they are. They're stopgap guys. But Nashville improved. They got James Neal. You know, they made a trade and they got a better player that has improved their roster from how it was at the end of the year last year.
I think the comparisons that happened earlier, Drew, between the Nashville Predators and the Winnipeg Jets were more so the style of play they wanted to have and the consistency, not so much necessarily maybe the organizational philosophy. But
let me just interrupt for a second. You would say, I think you would agree that Nashville is generally a team that would also want to primarily build through the draft.
I think every team wants to build through the draft.
Exactly that's exactly right.
I mean, what we're talking about here is there's several ways to build a team, and there are, if you wanted to break them into two major areas, it's building through the draft and then player acquisitions or player management, whatever you want to call it.
Free agency,
personnel, free agency. Let's just call it free agency and trades. And as we know, guys, the Jets have not been major players in free agency, and we don't expect them to be players in free agency because of where this team is and what they stand for. I don't think anybody was expecting the Jets to sign Thomas Vanek or sign a Dave Boland. At least I wasn't, and I don't think that the Jets were ever seriously considering drafting and free agency confused here. But I think it goes back to, when you look at this team and you assess this team, is Chevy saying that this team, I still think with the core of this team, we can still get into the playoffs if we still get improvements from some of our players? Or is it time to look at the team and say, because we're in the Central Division, is it maybe time to move an Evander Kane? Is it time to maybe move an Andrew Ladd? And I'm not suggesting moving Andrew Ladd by any stretch of the imagination, but these are some of the options that you have to look at based on where the Jets are at. Because you could argue that the Jets aren't any further ahead of where they were a year ago. And I think the Jets have a chance of making the playoffs. I don't personally think this year the chances are very good when you consider what the other teams in the Central Division have done.
They're probably the worst team in the division right now.
Well, they're not a top team in the division. And I'm more optimistic than I think you guys were last year about the Jets' chances. But I think I look at the Jets team this year and, well, heading into the training camp here, and there are certain holes that still haven't been addressed.
Menezi, what have they done this offseason, aside from Perreault for Jokinen, which I think is an upgrade, but it isn't Gretzky over Jokinen. They've done that. That's it. And this is the team last year that, I know Paul Maurice, a full season of Paul Maurice, that's great, but Paul Maurice has still got a call on the third line left winger who's nobody right now.
Yeah.
The Paul Maurice has still got a call on Grant Clipsom to conceivably be in his top four. Or Mark Stewart to be in his top four. I mean, Paul Maurice isn't gonna turn Mark Stewart into Bobby Orr here. So I mean, if that's the case, and then you obviously have the goaltending issue, which is a significant issue, and you're looking at all those problems, and you think, well, why would they be any better than they were last year? I mean, aside from a couple points here or there, why would they? And never mind the fact that everybody in the division conceivably has gotten better. Chicago adds Brad Richards. St. Louis adds Stasny. You could argue whether Miller or Stasny, but St. Louis adds Stasny. Dallas adds Jason Spezza. Nashville adds Ribeiro, Roy, and James Neal. And Colorado, maybe you say they go worse without Stasny. They add Iginla. They add Brad Stewart. So, I mean, you're looking at this division. I'm forgetting one team, too, I think.
Minnesota,
and they had Thomas Vanek. So I mean, when you look at this division, everybody's gotten better. You've probably stayed the same, if not become better just by a little bit. How do you expect to make the playoffs? Never mind the crossover with those other teams in the division, other division that are unreal. So if you're not going to conceivably, if you don't have a reasonable shot to make the playoffs and make the playoffs and make a dent in the playoffs,
sure,
then why are you holding on to these guys with shorter term on their deals? I wonder that.
It's a question that has to be asked because we're not being overly negative here. I want the Jets to make the playoffs. I'm from Winnipeg and we do this show and it's Jets-centric, but you have to look at what's happening in the division and what the Jets have done. And, you know, Richie mentions goaltending. To me, goaltending and defense are my major concerns here. For me, yeah, sure, you'd like to obviously have Jonathan Toews on your top line for the Winnipeg Jets, but that's not going to happen. So I think the forwards, to me, yeah, you might have a hole on the third line, but to me, you're still desiring a top four defenseman, and you're still desiring an upgrade in goal. And that hasn't happened. And to me, that doesn't... And again, yes, do the Jets want more out of Andrei Pavlik, and do they expect his numbers to be better? Absolutely, but the defense in front of him has to be better too, guys.
Well, that, you can expect all sorts of things. It doesn't necessarily mean they possess that ability to be better. I mean, I think he probably possesses the ability to be slightly better than last year, but I think it's fool's gold to expect that he's going to become a top 10, top 12 right. goaltender right now.
Right. And then the other issue is if you think he's going to be better, don't you want to insulate him a little bit more with better defense? Never mind a system that you think you're playing better, but better defense.
Sure.
And that's the thing. You know, if you believe that, and if Hutchinson does come in and take over that role, whatever it may be, but if you believe that, don't you want to make him better? Don't you want to insulate
make it easier on him to be better, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll deal a little bit more on this issue. We'll look at what some of the other people in the NHL are saying about Kevin Cheveldayoff and his tendencies. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
You know, I just want to say something. You know, a few people on Twitter that are listening to the show are saying that we're trashing Chevy. No, we're not trashing Chevy. Richie wrote an article examining his trading tendencies, and we're being critical. Huge difference here. We're not being disrespectful or anything like that. We're just making observations and providing our insight, and that's what we're doing. I mean, we got, you know, the thing is, we could sit here all day and be happy-go-lucky and everything like that, but we're trying to bring light to the Winnipeg Jets as they stand right now, how they're being managed. Just saying. I mean, there's a difference. I know that you're reading a couple tweets off air where people are getting a little bit mad here, but I mean,
you want something that's trashing Kevin Cheveldayoff. This is Steve Simmons in the Toronto Sun last week. If anyone other than the just happy to be there Kevin Cheveldayoff were general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, Evander Kane would have been traded by now. Now, I mean, I think there's probably a fair bit of truth in what Steve Simmons writes there, but he writes it in a pretty calling somebody just happy to be there.
I don't think that it's happy to be there and not trading him. I just think the Evander Kane's a different story in a sense in terms of getting a return and what was being offered, and obviously we're not privy to that information. But it's not just an Evander Kane thing. I want to move it back. It's been a 3-year thing where there hasn't been any player movement. That's the issue. And if you look at the trades, and it's the type of trades that have been made. There's been two NHL player for NHL draft pick trades. There's been five draft pick for NHL player trades, and there's been four minor league player for minor league player trades. That's essentially like hardly any trades at all.
Well, I mean, the four minor league player for minor league player trades are, I mean, you know.
So that's what I'm saying. So, and that is, so forget the Kane thing for a second, although that certainly plays into a lack of activity. And that goes more to issues and, you know, other issues that we've discussed on the show ad nauseum. I don't want to get away from the point. The point is there hasn't been any, you know, real movement at all over this period of time. And another issue is, and I think it goes back to what we were saying last segment, well, you're using the primes of a lot of these players during non-playoff years.
Sure.
And what happens when they're finally, you know, through the prime years and you haven't acquired assets for them at their peak? The goal of the NHL is to try and come all at the same time. That's ideally what you want to do. And for people to analogize this team with Chicago or with L.A. even, like L.A. got Drew Doughty, number 2 overall. And I have it on pretty good authority that L.A. would have taken Drew Doughty over Steve Stamkos if they had the number 1 pick. Like Drew Doughty is...
And you could argue right now that even though Steven Stamkos is a 60-goal scorer,
that's right.
Drew Doughty's a franchise defenseman. Would anybody argue with him as a number 1 overall pick?
I mean, you saw him at the Olympics. He's the best defenseman in the world there. I mean, and he's won 2 cups. The point is, there's nobody on, and Jacob Trouba is a great player, but he's not Drew Doughty. There's no, like, and Anze Kopitar, I think, was a 7th pick, but they've hit with other picks as well, and it's taken a long time to develop, but they got the 2nd overall pick in the NHL draft. Chicago got Kane 1 and Taves 3, I believe it was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking drafting in the top 5. You know, Nikolai Ehlers might be a tremendous player, but it's, you know, there's a lot less risk in drafting in the top 5. So, it's about being a middling team. It's about being, you know, what are you going to be? And that's a concern I would have if I was a fan of the team. And you look at the tendencies, and you don't know how to, you know, it's hard. You know, you look at the history to try and predict the future. And in some senses that works, and you know, some senses it may not. We don't know his first trade is going to be because there hasn't really been that one. So we don't know what an Evander Kane trade will look like. I think he will be traded, but you know, if he is traded. So these are all the question marks that you have to deal with. And when you're when you're a fan of the team, you look at it from the fan's perspective, and they say, okay, we hope to make the playoffs. Not with this team, I don't think. So then what? Well, then the fans generally look at, okay, you know, then how do we get better for the future? Well, how do you get better for the future?
Well, it seems like they're counting. I mean, they keep talking about drafting and drafting and drafting, but there seems like...
And they drafted quite well, as you pointed out. Yeah. So, I mean, so far those picks have seemed to have turned out quite well. Don't get me wrong.
But are any of those guys game changers? Are any of those guys franchise-changing players?
Well, I mean, Jacob Trouba has the look of being a franchise-changing player, Drew, and Mark Scheifele progressed faster than I thought. And I'm not talking almost entirely on the way he's skating was improved drastically last year, and he's worked hard at it and worked hard in general. You see him working hard after practices and such, but I think Trouba has proven to be possibly a game changer. Scheifele, we will see. We don't know anything. Most people don't know anything, and I certainly don't know anything about Morrissey and Nikolai Ehlers aside from watching Ehlers on tape. I haven't seen Morrissey play at all, like a snippet in the World Juniors. But the point is, you're not always going to hit.
Yeah.
And, you know, and even if you do hit on all four of those, you know, you're talking a right side defenseman, you're talking a right winger, a center, and a left side defenseman. It takes a long time to accumulate these things.
Right. And you know, you mentioned the Los Angeles Kings and the Chicago Blackhawks, the two most successful teams over the last 4 or 5 years, And they were bad for a very long time. I mean, remember the LA Kings post Gretzky? They had some very, very poor years. And you remember in Chicago, at the United Center, I mean, they couldn't draw flies. You know, we're talking early 2000s there. So, you know, I'm not saying that it's that bad here in Winnipeg, but the point is, at this stage of development, I think what Richie's really kind of looking towards is the next 2 or 3 years. And, you know, you mentioned guys like Josh Morrissey, Nikolai Ehlers, and I think those players will have a good chance at this point to make the Jets within the next 1 or 2 years, 3 years. I mean, maybe with Ehlers, maybe he needs another couple years before he plays for the Jets. But the point is, at that point, where are the rest of these players? And do you still have the core of this team? So do you still have the Blake Wheelers, the Brian Littles, the Andrew Ladds, and Dustin Byfuglien? Ladd and Byfuglien would be in the last year of their contracts next year.
But then the question on that point is, you wait till next year, or are you going to get as much as you would if you were looking to deal them right now?
Right. And kind of that's the issue. And again, we're not advocating for Ladd or Buff to be traded specifically, but you have to be looking at trading someone because your assets right now are the core pieces that you have.
You have to be looking to do something to not to shake up this roster just for the sake of shaking it
totally
up.
That's right. Never, it's nothing that's not the point of any of this.
No.
It's to trade just to trade.
It's to trade because you're not good enough as currently constructed.
Right. And the other thing is, you know, quickly, I've got a lot of feedback on the article and about, you know, no trade clauses to Winnipeg and stuff like that. I mean, not every player in the National Hockey League has a no trade clause to Winnipeg. That is overblown. There's a ton of players, young players, in the NHL who want an opportunity to play, and they could be playing in Siberia. They don't care.
Well, there's also
I think that's blown out of proportion. Maybe Jason Spezza wouldn't want to play here, but that wouldn't be somebody to be looking at anyways.
And Richie, doesn't it have to be mentioned as well that you can waive your no trade clause?
Absolutely, that's also true.
So I mean, you could have a no trade clause. But if a player, and you know, we're not going to specify here because we're kind of talking in what ifs. But you know, you can waive the no trade clause, and it's not. We don't always know how many players exactly have the no trade clauses, but I don't think that is a driving factor in why Chevy hasn't made a trade. I think it's just that he hasn't found the right trade.
I think he's gun shy on it. I mean, I think that's. I mean, also part of
it's another way of saying it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a combination of all those factors, I think.
Well, I think the proof's in the
Yeah, in the article.
And yeah.
The proof's in the article. I'll tweet it out again in case you missed it. Let's go to break. When we come back, Al Mir from Sports Illustrated is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from Sports Illustrated, Al Mir. Al, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me out, fellas.
Al, you wrote an article on SI.com earlier this week. You've written a number of articles, but the one that we wanted to start with is the article, a profile of, not a profile, but just an examination of the work that Jim Neal, Dallas Stars general manager, has done over the last couple of summers, acquiring Tyler Seguin 2 summers ago, and then this past summer getting Jason Spezza. You know, we hear how it's impossible to acquire top line centermen in the NHL, yet Jim Neal has been able to do it 2 years in a row. You know, is he quickly establishing himself in the upper echelon of NHL general managers?
That's a good question. I mean, for years we've been hearing about how good a guy or how good a fit Jim Neal would be as a head man. I mean, he was like Sidney Crosby in a way, you know. Just the reputation that he built before he actually got a chance to prove himself was you know, over the moon. So he finally gets in there, and in a matter of weeks, he comes up with a number one center. Now, it was kind of a crazy deal in terms of the timing of it. Obviously, Boston was in a unique situation. They had a player that was going to be a salary cap issue. They'd come off, just losing in the Stanley Cup in a very close series. They felt like they needed to shake things up a bit. But he was the guy who looked at that, saw an opportunity, and left, and made a significant commitment. A lot of guys won't trade, big-name players off the roster or top prospects. Neal had the courage of his convictions to do both. And, showed right from the start that he was a guy who was serious, not just about building a team for the long term, but for immediate success as well.
And how many GMs do you think use the salary cap as a bit of a crutch in terms of, being hesitant to make trades?
I don't know if I'd say it's a crutch as much as, it's a very real thing. I mean, you look around the league and you see how handcuffed GMs are, especially this year, when the cap came in, at a lower number than we really all expected it would. So I don't know if I'd say it's a crutch. I think it's fair to recognize that some guys aren't just working with that, but they also have internal budgets that are limiting their abilities to make moves. I think if you look at a team that is filling a building that is looking to be competitive, the cap should not be an issue, but it still is in some towns.
Al, in this article talking about Jim Neal and making other NHL GMs looking bad, you mentioned Kevin Cheveldayoff, of course, of the Jets, and you mentioned Dave Nonis of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Considering that the way the season's ended for both teams, not making the playoffs, and considering that there are certain holes on the team, how surprised were you maybe that they weren't more active in free agency or making trades?
I think surprised isn't the right word. Like, when I look at a guy like Chevy, I think we've come to expect that he's not a guy that is prone to make moves. As much as you want him to be that guy, I don't think he is. And I don't know whether it's paralysis. I don't know whether he has been told, hey, here's the plan. We're going to stick with it. We don't want to spend money. I don't know if it's a matter of him being worried about being taken advantage of. I mean, it's really hard to understand where he's coming from. He's been on the job for 3 years now, hasn't been able to complete a trade involving an NHL player for an NHL player. He's a guy who I want to expect more from, but at this point, I think we have to recognize this is who he is. He's just not someone who is willing or able to make the big move.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Al Muir of Sports Illustrated talking about his recent article on Jim Neal of the Dallas Stars and the performance that he's had as the Stars general manager over the last couple of years. Al, you know, we were talking about Kevin Cheveldayoff in the last couple segments prior, and you know, you look at the Jets, and I mean, we know the Jets roster, you know, top to bottom. We've, you know, covered them for the last 3 years, 4 years, whatever it is at this point in time. And it seems amazing that, you know, you talk about sort of paralysis, you know, that anybody could think that going year after year with the same roster is good enough, especially against in the competitive Central Division that they play in. Yet the Jets refuse to do anything to. You know, either bottom out, which I think if any market would understand it, it might be Winnipeg, say, yep, we're not good enough in this current situation. Yet year after year, it's almost like they keep repeating the same mistakes.
Yeah, and I think that has to be just absolutely maddening for fans there. You know, you've got a team that is consistently so mediocre, you know, what, 84 points and what, 50 and 84 and 83 and 80. I mean, you go back and they just seem to be just stuck in this rut of just being an average club that doesn't get anywhere better or doesn't seem to be willing to take a fall with a larger vision of future success like Buffalo. I mean, as bad as things are in Buffalo now and as bad as they're going to be for the next year or two, you can look at that team and go, wow, 5 years from now, we're going to be a cup contender. You know, this is going to be a really fun team to grow with. You know, when you look at Winnipeg and you sort of think, okay, I look at this roster now and it's got guys who can play in the NHL, but how many of these guys are actually, you know, capable of being part of a really successful team? You know, obviously you've got a guy like Trouba who I think is going to be a real nice player. You know, Scheifele is going to be a super player down the line. And you've got some decent guys who can play complementary roles, but the way that they've sort of allowed this thing to just sort of muddle along, you know, it just doesn't feel like there's a broader vision that would suggest that, you know, let's just stick with this and it's all going to come together in a few years, guys. I understand that he really wants to build through, you know, through the draft. You know, every GM does. When you've got the salary cap and you're limited by how much you can spend, you want to bring in young, affordable talent, develop your own, you know, grab as many assets as you can and hope that you knock one out of the park. But, you know, when you look at the track record of the organization, when you look around the league and you compare the number of players that they're developing compared to what other franchises are developing, they're just not doing a good enough job. You know, I know there's a lot of excitement about some of the kids in the system now, but there's no guarantees. You know, a prospect is a prospect. You can go to Polo Park's mall and you're probably going to trip over five guys who are prospects. It's not, there are no guarantees. You need real, legitimate, high-end NHL talent, and Winnipeg just hasn't seemed capable of developing or nurturing that sort of guy to this point.
Alan, you mentioned Dave Nonis in the piece as well on SI.com, and it's interesting, Dave Nonis, in that, you know, when he gets his opportunities, it's been following Brian Burke, so it's kind of been trying to distinguish himself from Burke, but also, you know, there's that factor, and then there's obviously being in the fishbowl of both Vancouver and Toronto. What would you want to see from him, you know, in terms of something different than obviously he's done this offseason?
You know, again, I think Toronto is a market that would respect a legitimate rebuild. You know, you want to have a purpose. You want to feel like, as a fan, you want to feel like the money and time and heart that you're investing in the team has an end goal. You know, being a decent club, it's just a rut of nothing. You know, where there's, when I look at Toronto, I see a team that has, again, a couple of decent pieces, but they have spent their money so poorly in free agency, trying to maybe, you know, instead of finding pieces that they can build around, they sort of have gone out and gotten the complementary pieces first without getting those middle guys that they, the core guys that they really need. And I'd sort of like to see them sort of you know, figure out who they want to be. Figure out who the guys are that they can build around, and then do the building around them. And to this point, they've sort of done it backwards.
Al, later in today, this is getting a little bit off topic here off of this article, but later today we're going to be talking about our winners and losers of free agency thus far. I guess there's still a few weeks left for teams to sign players, but most of the players that will be signed have been signed already. You cover the entire NHL for Sports Illustrated. To you, who were maybe a couple big winners and losers that you saw in free agency? Is it one of the teams we mentioned, or is it another team that was a big winner so far?
Well, you know, I kind of like, you know, what Pittsburgh did in grabbing, you know, Christian Ehrhoff. I think that's a deal that a lot of people are going to look at as a real smart move down the line. You know, they took the money that they might have spent on Brooks Orpik and used it on a guy who can, you know, really play a different kind of role, who can be reliable at both ends of the ice and play a little more. Or play a smarter physical game, maybe chip in on power play, and at a great bargain price. So I really like that addition. You know, the Stars, obviously, I think a lot gets made of the Spezza deal. But, you know, grabbing Alex Hemsky was huge, I think. Spezza is a guy who is not the easiest to play with. You know, you assume he's a great playmaker, and it must be fun to just, you know, you can throw a fire hydrant out there with him and he's going to get 20 goals. It doesn't work that way. They tried that, you know, or they expected Bobby Ryan to be a guy that they could just throw on a line with him and magic would happen. It didn't. Grabbing Alex Hemsky at the deadline, he was a guy who proved that he could play with Spezza over the last 20 games of the season or whatever it was. So for Jim Neal to go out and grab Hemsky and know that he's got a guy who can play with Spezza, I think that was a brilliant move, and especially at the money. He got him at a real fair deal, 3 years, $12 million, I think it was. So that was great. The Lightning obviously had a huge summer in terms of you know, grabbing guys like, you know, Brian Boyle to fill up their fourth line center role, give them some size down the middle. They're a little small up front. So getting a guy like him helps. Strowman, I think, is a really nice add. You know, again, there's not a lot of flash to him, but, you know, he's just a solid guy that, you know, you can throw out there in a top four role, and he's gonna play really well for you. The Blackhawks, another team that, even though they didn't do much, they addressed a glaring need. I mean, for years we've known they've needed a number two center, but they haven't really had the cap room to make it happen, to get a guy like Brad Richards, who admittedly is flawed, is nowhere near the player he was, but 1 year, $2 million, you can throw him out there with Patrick Kane and somebody else, and all of a sudden, that team looks a lot more dangerous even than they were last year. So, you know, I look at them as the big winners so far.
Al Muir covers the NHL for Sports Illustrated. Al, thanks very much for joining us this morning. Appreciate the time.
Anytime, fellas. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, Al. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we're going to discuss our free agency winners and losers.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Al Muir of Sports Illustrated for joining us. It will be available in a podcast edition. Probably not till Monday, though, because Remus is away on holidays this weekend. We granted him a little bit of vacation time. He's out for a nice romantic weekend with the lady friend, so we'll let that slide.
You know, I want to give a shout-out right now to Rich Kloon, who started his own radio show on Insta Radio. I don't know if you heard this. I listened to it
last
night.
Like Rich Kloon, the former Nashville Predator?
No, he's still on the Nashville Predators.
Oh, is he? Okay.
He's openly come out and with Scott Burnside, he's admitted that he's a recovering alcoholic, but he had his own half an hour show on Insta Radio, and it's great. He opens up, and if you have a chance, maybe we can link it on our Twitter, or I'll send it out. But it's just great stuff. The guy's opening up about, you know, himself and the problems he's had. So I really respect that. It's really nice to see people doing that in this day and age. So I would recommend, I certainly liked it, and if you want to listen to it, you can find it. You're just searching Rich Kloon and Insta Radio, but I'll try to find it and link it.
Okay, well said there, Ezzy. Winners and losers in free agency, guys. We're going to look at winners probably this segment, losers next segment. So why don't we start it off? Richie, I'll start with you. You know, do you have one team in particular that you think is, you know, head and shoulders above the other teams in the so far of the NHL offseason, where, I mean, let's be honest, you know, the players, you know, any of the guys who are still UFAs, I'd be shocked if they got anything more than a one-year deal at this point in time. So, you know, to your mind, who's the big winner and loser so far this offseason?
You know, Drew, I don't think there's that many winners in free agency. I think for the most part, you overpay. And I think if you avoid free agency, you're doing fairly well. I think in free agency, you can have winners and losers if it's Parise Suter. When you're bidding for the likes of Paul Stastny, who I used to like, I think it's quite overrated at this point. I don't think there's that many winners. I did like what Nashville did. I like the fact that they added Ribeiro on a one-year deal. The risk there is very limited. The reward, I think, is quite high. He's a very talented player. Roy, I think, is not as... I think his name carries more value than his actual play now. I don't think Derek Roy is very effective. But Mike Ribeiro, I think, can be effective, especially in the style that Nashville is going to play. We don't know what's going on in Pittsburgh, but I like the fact that they add Guy Lagaroff and they add guys on one-year deals. But I don't think they're necessarily a winner. I actually like, and I think this goes into the whole picture of what the Islanders and Washington are doing. I honestly think, Drew, that there are no winners in free agency. Like, I really do. I don't think any team wins by spending a boatload of money. Because, I mean, Tampa Bay, I like what they did with Boyle. But like I don't love Stroman. Okay, so when you look at it that way, I don't think there's any real winners. But if you look at it when we evaluated free agency last week, especially the Metropolitan Division, and you looked at the Islanders and Washington based on their salary structure and who they're adding and what they need, the Capitals and the Islanders have gotten better. And I think when they're going to have to pay their other players will be up for contracts. So I don't mind what they did. But for me to proclaim a winner, I think everybody overpaid. And I think good players got paid like great players, and average players got paid like good players. I can find a boatload of losers, though, for you.
Save those for next segment. We'll do the losers next segment. That's always the easier of the two. Ezzy, how about you?
I see what Richie's point is insofar as so many players are making more money than they can in free agency, and they wouldn't make that type of money if it was the regular season. So I guess I'm going to ignore that small little million-dollar aspect of free agency. But, you know, Richie mentions the Tampa Bay Lightning, and we've argued this before. We're not, you know, as high on – Richie's not as high on Anton Stroman as I am. But, you know, I really do like the moves that the Tampa Bay Lightning made. I was hoping the Jets might acquire a guy like Brian Boyle, a guy that was a huge part of the New York Rangers team over the last few years. Obviously, a huge frame at 6'7", a guy that can kill penalties and chip in the odd goal, and he adds toughness. I really thought that last year the Tampa Bay Lightning were really negatively affected by no Ben Bishop and the fact that they had a team that, although they had success at the AHL level, they had a lot of players that was their first NHL postseason experience. And they've brought back guys like Tyler Johnson, obviously, and Andre Palat, guys that had great rookie seasons. And I think when you add Anton Stroman and Brian Boyle, veteran players who add a little bit of toughness to your team and help the depth on your defense, and I think when you look at where they're going and a healthy Ben Bishop, I think the Tampa Bay Lightning, to me, are a team. And then you have a healthy Steven Stamkos all year, obviously, and they've got Callahan under contract. So I'm looking at maybe these signings, Richie, not as individual signings, but how they, I guess, address needs and holes that the Tampa Bay Lightning have. So I think that, for me, the Tampa Bay Lightning are a winner. And Al Muir mentioned the Nashville Predators. How can you not like what the Nashville Predators have done, considering that they didn't overpay for any of these guys? Mm-hmm. And when you consider that Mike Fisher is going to be out for 4 to 6 months with that injury, and they've still managed to now have a plethora of centermen, when you thought maybe they would be lacking a couple centermen, and you throw in Olli Jokinen and Derek Roy and Ribeiro, and they've still got Paul Gostad there. So I think that, for me, the Nashville Predators were a winner. And I guess if you throw in, you know, the Neal trade as well, you know, that could potentially be win-lose. You shed a little bit of salary, but you kind of add a different dimension. He has, I think, the potential to score more goals than Hornquist can score. But I think, you know, when I look at the other winners, I think, you know, you could mention Chicago, and you could mention Dallas getting Spezza and then bringing Alex Hemsky over. I still think, though, you know, back to what Richie was saying about how he could find a lot of losers, I still think when you look at what free agency has become post most recent CBA, I think you can see that even though you're not seeing the level of ridiculousness that maybe you saw, I always like to go back to Bobby Holik, who we had on the show. I think he's been one of our best guests that we've actually had on the show. I'm not too sure if he's still doing Holik on hockey and still doing the radio thing, but I still think that madness. I mean, Bobby Holik, you know, you guys know I'm a big Devils fan, and he was a big part of a Stanley Cup in New Jersey, but when Bobby Holik was paid $9 million by Glenn Sather, I think that, to me, was the height of ridiculousness in free agency. So I don't think you're seeing that as much, but you're still seeing a lot of money thrown around for mediocre players. And is that just the way it is now, guys? And I kind of think that that's the way it is going to be. And you look at the 2015 free agency class, Richie, and it's not much stronger than this class.
Well, all the big long-term deals, this is what happens, right? So you look at free agency, and, you know, I agree with Ezzy, and a lot of them, you know, I talked about it before, the Nashville one-year deals and the Pittsburgh one-year deals, and I think more is going on in Pittsburgh, to be honest. But and then you look at Chicago one-year deal. Yeah, I mean, what's the risk and reward? That's what you're looking at. But you're looking at the big-time money for some of these guys who are just not that good, and you're overpaying.
And sometimes you look at a contract, and I think we'd all agree that Derek Roy and Mike Ribeiro, those were good contracts, and you see, you know, those contracts are now called bargains. But and I think Ribeiro, yeah, you're 2 years ago, Mike Ribeiro was a point a game player with the Washington Capitals, so him signing for whatever it was, $1.5 million or around there, to me, yes, that is a bargain. And he's had off ice problems, so I guess that factors in. But other players like Derek Roy making $1 million, is that a bargain or is that what he should be paid? And it's tough to actually know. And I, like, Richie knows more about this stuff than I do. But when I try to, you know, you throw out these numbers, I mean, you throw out $3 million, $4 million these days as if you're talking about a small amount of money. And that's still above average for an NHL salary, right? So maybe that's just the way the economics, where the economics are at in not only hockey, but professional sports in general, where players make a lot of money, and it's not that hard for a guy to get an extra $1 million because a team really wants him. So I guess I'm looking more at the winners and losers of free agency in terms of what they did to really make their team better. And, you know, Brad Richards, they signed him to a one-year deal, and now they have the second veteran second-line center that they've wanted. So to me, you got to put in Chicago there as a winner. And as Al Muir mentioned, teams like Chicago, Philly, they've been really handcuffed by the fact that they haven't had the salary cap room. So I think you can't ignore how much a player makes and as it relates to the salary cap. But I think if you're going to look at that as a major, and you have to, you really do have to. I mean, when you're signing a guy like Benoit Pouliot, 5 years, $4 million a year, the reason why that's
I think we have I think we're getting into our loser category a little bit early.
I mean, come on, how many teams? I mean, we could take this to Twitter. I mean, and I don't want to pick on Benoit Pouliot here because I think he scored some key goals for the Rangers, but how many teams were going to pay him $20 million? Like how many teams in the NHL were... Was there a bidding war? I don't think there was. And again, I don't want to pick on him. I'm just saying...
It's never the player's fault.
It's our
fault
job. We have all these players that we got to address them, right? And
it's never a player's fault to accept a bad contract.
Exactly.
It's a general manager's fault of the team that offered it. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the loser side of the free agency sweepstakes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest running independent comedy club in North America. For over 25 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Simon King is in town. Tickets available for him, RumorsComedyClub.com. Of course, the concert series event coming up in September, Broken Lizard, the guys behind Super Troopers and Beer Fest are going to be at Rumors, so you can get tickets for that. That's at rumorscomedyclub.com. Quick note regarding arbitration. The Cody Franson of the Toronto Maple Leafs is the first player to go to arbitration, and that's going to happen on Monday. In the new CBA, the player and the team have to exchange arbitration figures 48 hours ahead of the hearing. The Leafs have submitted a figure at $2 million for Cody Franzen, and Franzen has submitted a figure of $4.2 million. So those are the numbers that the arbitrator is going to be working with if both sides don't reach an agreement prior to Monday and the first arbitration hearing in the NHL. Again, the Jets have one potential arbitration case. That's Michael Frolik. Expectations are that they will sign him to a long-term contract before that. Supposedly, that's the intention. Right now, no news on that front.
$2 million is pretty low.
That the Leafs have lowballed on Cody Franzen?
Yeah, I mean, it'll probably be somewhere in the middle, like you'd expect. But Franzen kind of mismanaged his whole. I don't know who's representing him now, but that's been seemingly mismanaged.
Yep.
Because I think he's a physical guy. He's a good puck mover, but he's not a great skater. He's a guy, if used in the right situations, I think could make a little more money than that and have a little more success.
Yeah, I like Cody Franzen, and you know, maybe he didn't have the finish that he wanted in Toronto, Richie, but you always wonder when they're that far apart. Because we're talking about players in free agency and maybe getting a little bit more money, but you're talking... The agent and the team are $2.2 million apart. I mean, that's... Well, and again, I think usually in these arbitration cases, you see, as Richie mentioned, the contract ends up being somewhere in the middle there. But I think for the Toronto Maple Leafs, Cody Franzen is one of the players from last year that you want to keep, because we know that a lot of defensemen, they've decided to part ways with, whether it's Carl Gunnarsson or Tim Gleason, who went back to Carolina. They brought in Stefan Robidaux there, so the Toronto Maple Leafs are still that defense is a work in progress, especially with Morgan Rielly and Jake Gardner, who have taken a little bit longer to kind of learn the defensive side of the NHL game.
Your right side is what, I mean, if Robidaux obviously needs to get healthy, but Robidaux, Polak, and Franzen, your right side. You want to be faster on the right side, I'm pretty sure, and then obviously Gardner, Rielly, and Phaneuf on the left side, I think is what you're looking at right now. So, I mean, obviously there's some other guys who could come into play and other decisions that need to be made. But the Leafs, I wanted to get tougher and et cetera, but they might have some issues with foot speed on the back end there.
Let's look at the losers in the free agency world so far. Last segment we spent talking about the winners, of which there were fewer than there are going to be losers that we'll talk about this segment. Richie, you seem like you're ready to get this started.
Well, I mean, the Florida Panthers are the biggest loser to me because they signed David Bullen, who I believe is a really good third-line center, to a $5.5 million deal for 5 years. And that's just quite ridiculous as far as I'm concerned. And that's a big one to me. UC Okunin for $4 million. I mean, is UC Okunin a guy who plays really well with talented players as a kind of a Swiss Army knife center, wing, you know, smart player? But is he going to get it done when it matters, if they're going to play when it matters? $4 million for 4 years for him seems quite high. You know, Willie Mitchell bringing him in kind of solidify. 4.25 is an overpay, but the 2 years I can deal with and having a veteran influence. But and Sean Thornton and Derek McKenzie, you know, That's fine, but you know, you could argue those were overpaid. But the big issue here is the Bolin contract. And if I realize they have Barkov and I realize they have Bukestad and I realize they probably want those guys to be their 1-2 and they're not going to be paying them big time money because they're on entry level deals right now. But those guys will get off entry level deals, and I realize they'll be in no arbitration eligibility or even in arbitration eligibility, and their contracts will be limited based on the team having more leverage. Even so, to pay your third-line center, I think what you would want to be your third-line center in a good team, $5.5 million, is going to eventually come back to bite you.
Sure.
And that's, to me, would make them the biggest losers. The other contract that I take significant issue with, as you mentioned last segment, is Benoit Pouliot. It's on a team that needs to get tougher and bigger. I realize Pouliot's big. He's not tough. He's undisciplined. I think he plays selfishly at many times on the ice. To give him a contract, the term and money they gave him is outlandish to me. So I make Edmonton a loser. I know some people like Mark Fain. I don't know. I know a little bit about Mark Fain. I don't know a ton about him, and I know that Lou Lamoriello on a team that needs defense decided to let him go for that money, so I would be skeptical of that as well, but I can speak far more to Benoit Pouliot than I can Fain. I know Fain is a puck mover and can skate a bit. He's not going to be your, you know, Scotty Stevens, as we mentioned, and I have to watch him a little bit more, but those are two squads you got to wonder sometimes.
In the classic sense of puck mover, I wouldn't even really describe Mark Fain as a puck mover. I mean, on the Devils, he was a player who played in their top four, But for I forget how much he made, if it was $3 million or $4 million. I don't think that
how much he signed for, you're saying? He signed for 4 years, $14 million, $3.5 million per year.
That's a lot of money to give a player who on a good team is in the bottom six at best. He's an extra defenseman, maybe on some
teams. Also gave Nikitin 4.5. That was a trade.
I like Nikitin better than Fain, but you know,
$1 million better?
Yeah. Well, talking about the losers, I have to agree with Richie. As far as the Florida Panthers go, to me, I'm a big fan of Dave Boland. I think, sure he's overpaid.
So am I. I like
sure,
him.
Sure he's overpaid and they gave him too many years, but I think it's the moves that they made as a whole. Like, does Dale Tallon think the Florida Panthers are going to be a team that can make the playoffs and possibly upset a team like the Boston Bruins or the Montreal Canadiens or Pittsburgh Penguins? To me, the Florida Panthers, I really like what they're doing there, and they've had some really high draft picks. And you look at Nick Bjugstad, you look at Alexander Barkov, you look at Aaron Ekblad. And I like what they're doing, but to me, this is a team that's 2 or 3 years away at least. They're not a team to me. I don't think they're making the playoffs this year. And for me, is Dale Tallon looking at his team and is he saying, okay, well, we have a good chance at making the playoffs, but we have a really good chance and we can be a really good team 2 or 3 years from now. Well, why are you signing all of these players now? Why aren't you signing those players or acquiring those players at the trade deadline? Willie Mitchell is a great... And we mentioned this last week, Richie, and I think you were bang on. Willie Mitchell, on the Stanley Cup champion LA Kings, to me, he's on a team. He plays a bottom-pairing role. Sure, he might be able to play top four, but he's playing a bottom-pairing role. You've got Drew Doughty and Jake Muzzin and Slava Voynov playing the top roles. He's a guy that his expectations are clear, and on a team like that, he's a physical defenseman on a physical team that has the puck a lot. Florida Panthers, even though they've got a lot of talented players, they're a young team. They're a team in transition, and I'm not saying that they're expecting Willie Mitchell to be a top defenseman for them, but I'm just saying you're paying him quite a bit of money to be kind of an extra defenseman. Now, you throw in Jussi Jokinen, and you throw in Sean Thornton, who was, of course, on the Boston Bruins for so many years, and you've signed a lot of players, obviously, to insulate kind of the younger players. And a guy like Aaron Ekblad, he might make the team. But,
probably will.
But who knows, right? And you've just signed Dmitry Kulikov. I think we'll talk about a little bit later when we talk about the players who were signed, and they got Gudbranson under contract. I really like what they're doing there, but you've thrown a lot of money to players on a team that I think, this is just my opinion, I think they're a couple years away from even making the playoffs. This was a bad team last year.
I can live with the Boland and Jokinen amounts if they were on two-year deals. You know, you're just sort of bridging a gap until you're the younger players that you mentioned, like Bjugstad and Barkov, are really ready to take on, you know, to really develop and be the dynamic players we think they are. If you sign Dave Boland for 2 years and $10 million, you know, he's making more money than he should at $5 million a year, but it's 2 years. I don't really care enough to get up in arms about it. The problem is going to be when, you know, 4 years from now, when Bjugstad and Barkov, hopefully, if you're a Florida Panthers fan, are way better than Dave Boland.
You'd hope that it happened within 2 years.
Sure. Yeah, fine. Agreed. And you hope that they're way better than Dave Boland, and he's making, like you said, he's making his $5.5 million, and he's a third line center, or worse potentially, if somebody else even develops there.
It's also injury prone too, which is an issue.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. It's the money itself, whatever, it's money. But when it's money and term, that's the part that I think really ends up hurting a team. And you know, it seems like the Florida Panthers aren't, you know, they might have to overpay to some degree to get a guy to go there, given their track record and everything else. But I'd rather overpay a guy. I'd rather give Dave Boland 3 years and, you know, $18 million.
Why do you have to overpay to get a guy there? I just think it's the product of having money to spend and spending the money. That's what I think it is.
Sure.
Why would you have to overpay a guy to go not pay what much in state tax, if anything?
I don't think they have any state tax.
And play in a nice area and have no pressure. I mean, I don't think there's a sale job that needs to go on there.
I'm saying, unless this guy wants to play, unless the player is hardwired to want to play for a team that is going to be successful, which, you know, and I'm not saying that Dave Boland is or isn't that guy. You know, if somebody knocks on my door and it's a bad team and they offer me $5.5 million and a good team is only offering me $3.5 million, it's going to be hard for me to turn down that $5.5 million.
I think the other loser in free agency before we're done the segment is Montreal, just because of their, I mean, I didn't like the Tom Gilbert signing, 2.8 for 2 years, but it's I think it's that signing for me combined with the, and I don't mind the Manny Malhotra signing, but it's the lack of activity.
The loss of Josh Georges.
You trade Georges.
Yeah.
You lose Gionta. Again, I know Gionta's not what he once was, and George's maybe isn't what he once was either.
The George's one still doesn't make much sense to me.
It's an odd one. That's for sure an odd one, Drew, and especially because you see how much of an impact he has on the room. Both of those guys. So you lose that, then you lose Vanek, and you haven't really addressed it at all. And yeah. Breer, for Parento, is not addressing it, and Gilbert's not addressing it. Matty Mahotra helps, but he's not addressing it. That's a loss for me. They're worse.
Yuri Sekhach isn't going to step in and be the answer if, you know.
I mean, I don't know anything about him.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I don't know anything about him either, but I mean.
He could be effective, but who knows, Drew? One other thing quickly. I didn't mention another team that I want to mention as a winner, I thought, and I forgot last segment. I thought Vancouver did a nice job. They get Verbata on the short-term deal. They get Miller on the short-term deal. They help with the Sedins with Verbata. That's what they hope, at least. Miller helps a younger team come along with a better goaltender, getting rid of that controversy and moving on from that. I like those moves. I like, obviously, Jim Benning's moves as a whole since he's been hired.
That's also, and they getting Derek Dorsett via trade as well.
Well, exactly.
The yeah, don't forget well. About my boy Lyndon Oive.
Yeah, Lyndon Oive is yeah. right. It's and actually, somewhere he's saying, my boy Ezzie Ginsberg. Yeah. Ezzie Oye Ginsberger. Right
I like there. The way Benning said to him, you're not getting, you know, the way that negotiation went. They just signed. So it seems like Benning has a nice assertive role there so far.
Well, you know, but yeah, exactly. You know, that's another general manager who's doing a lot of good work early on in his tenure as an NHL general manager. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL at the various signings that occurred this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Gentlemen, continuing on with our look around the NHL, number of signings this week, most of them of the RFA variety, in that players who weren't arbitration eligible for the most part. A couple of them were, actually. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, these are RFA guys whose rights already existed with a certain team. There were two UFA signings. We've touched on them briefly. That's the Predators, and we'll talk about them more next segment when we're joined by Willie Donick, Nashville Predators radio play-by-play guy.
It's relevant to Jets fans, too, because Nashville was that team that, you know, people were saying, okay, near the bottom of the division, these are the two teams, and that certainly helps the Nashville Predators.
Sure. They signed Mike Ribeiro 1 year, $1.05 million. They signed Derek Roy 1 year, $1 million. They avoid arbitration with restricted free agent defenseman Matthias Ekholm, getting him to a 2 year, $2.075 million contract, an average annual value of $1.04 million. You know, let's start with the Ribeiro and the Roy signing. If Mike Fisher doesn't get injured, do you think they sign these two guys?
Probably not both. But I think, Drew, there's so little downside to the contracts. I mean, Mike Ribeiro's deal is, and I realize he has, you know, he's had off-ice issues, and he's talked quite candidly to Josh Cooper of Tennessee and about those issues, marital issues and things like that. And Mike Ribeiro, I mean, I don't want Mike Ribeiro in the playoffs in Game 5 with the game on the line with the puck. I don't trust him. But I don't mind Mike Ribeiro on the side of on the half boards on the power play in Game 42 when you're trying to make the playoffs.
Setting up James Neal.
Yep. And he is he's not going to go in the corners. He's small, but he's extremely smart, nifty with the puck, and a great passer, sees the ice really well. And to get him for basically $1 million, when offensively, talent-wise, you saw what he got in free agency last year from Don Maloney, who doesn't spend a lot of money in Phoenix, I think that could end up being a beneficial move. Not only, let's put it out there, not only for Nashville, but also for Ribeiro's career. He has a good year. He bounces back to the free agent market and he can make some money. And remember, he's making money anyways with the Phoenix deal, with the buyout.
Sure.
So he's making. So if he signs for one, he's not actually making one this year. I think that's a bigger thing. Derek Roy, to me, I would be surprised if he had an effective year. It's not impossible, but I would be surprised. He's not big. He's nifty with the puck, but does he get around the ice as well as he used to? And if you're not big and you can't get around the ice as well as you used to, it's hard to be effective in the National Hockey League when it's a big man's game. That's a fast game. So I don't that one I don't love, but I'm okay with it because it's better probably than, and I know they have a lot of centers on the roster, and we're going to ask Willie about that, but I don't mind that. because it helps your depth anyways and it costs you so little.
Right. And the Nashville Predators were really in a position, even before the Mike Fisher injury that and the James Neal acquisition, and you give up Patrick Hornquist and Nick Spaulding, two players that were both forwards for you last year in your top six. But, you know, you just on the topic of Mike Ribeiro and Derek Roy, Mike Ribeiro, I think it meant a lot to David Poile that Mike Ribeiro came to Nashville and he kind of sought out Nashville in a way. And you read what Josh Cooper wrote about that. And Mike Ribeiro, after being bought out by the Phoenix Coyotes, boy, was that contract a disaster for Don Maloney. Mm-hmm. You know, not really a fault of his own. But you look at Mike Ribeiro and he had his worst year in a long time last year. 2 years ago, during the lockout shortened year with the Washington Capitals, he was a point-a-game player. So this is still a guy that can score at a high level in the NHL. But to me, I really liked how he saw that he wasn't being signed by a lot of teams, or a lot of teams, I should say, weren't showing interest in him. Mm-hmm. And he went and he saw an opportunity in Nashville. And as Richie mentioned, it's a one-year deal for $1 million, well below the NHL average. So for a player like him, who got 5.5 or whatever he got from the Phoenix Coyotes, that is a complete bargain. And, you know, as you mentioned, he is a player that can play with James Neal. He slots in immediately as your number one line center.
And how many Dallas together.
Exactly. And they've played together. And then, you know, Richie mentions Derek Roy. You know, Derek Roy went to Vancouver and then he went to St. Louis and it didn't work out. He's not the same player that he was when he was in his prime right. with the Buffalo Sabres.
He's not that old, but he's
yeah. yeah, he's 31 and he's lost
a lot of miles on that body.
He's lost his step the way he plays, but he's still, whether he's a second line center or a third line center. And I think that the Peter Laviolette's going to have some options. But I like those moves. And then you throw in Olli Jokinen, and it's possible that Olli Jokinen actually might have to play wing. He's for sure not going to be in the top six now that they've signed Ribeiro and Derek Roy, and especially when you throw in Mike Fisher coming back. So, I mean...
Well, Mike Ribeiro, I mean, Mike Fisher is not going to come back for a little while. I wouldn't be surprised if Derek Roy slots in as their third-line center, and then they go Ribeiro, Jokinen up the middle. Ribeiro, Jokinen, Roy, Gostad up the middle. But, I mean, whatever it is, we'll ask...
Well, I mean, why would Olli Jokinen be a second-line center for the Predators and he wouldn't be a second-line center for the Jets? I at this point in his career, I don't think Olli Jokinen is a top-six player, but, I mean, that's up to you, Drew, if you think...
I don't think he necessarily is good enough to be a top-six player either, but I think in Nashville, he might have to be in that role, like he had to be in that role for the Jets 2 years ago.
It depends on how they want to use... I mean, how do they want to utilize Colin Wilson on an ongoing basis? How do they want to utilize Matt Cullen, who's a natural center? They got a lot of centers on the roster, guys. I mean, a lot of these guys can play center,
yeah.
but won't necessarily do that. So it'll be interesting. We'll ask Willie about that. But that you know, hey, it's a good problem to have. Too many centers better than too many wingers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Other teams that have signed players this week, the Buffalo Sabres re-signed our restricted free agent, Tyler Ennis.
Yeah. Love
Richie, you love this guy. Five years, $23 million, salary cap hit of $4.6 million per season. Sort of an interesting contract. He's getting something like $7.5 million this year.
This year
in actual salary. Of course, the cap hit is less than that, but it starts high and then it diminishes as you go in terms of the actual payouts over the next 5 years.
Love the deal, though. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's had 5 years accrued in the National Hockey League, meaning he has 2 years till UFA status. He signs a five-year deal, giving up 3 years of unrestricted free agency and signs for only $4.6 million. Now, I think this is a guy who's a product of a bad environment, a product of a lack of identity in that organization. I think insulating him with more talent like they've done and leadership... He's a great skater. He works really hard. He has really good skills. I think they're going to get great value. I think he's a really good underrated player who's going to come into his own. And at $4.6 million, I believe they'll get great value in this deal. I think Tim Murray did a nice job here.
Yeah, and you mentioned last segment, you know, bringing in Brian Gionta, trading for Josh Georges, all of the talent they have there.
Matt Molson comes back.
Matt Molson's come back. You know, they drafted Sam Reinhardt. And you look at some of the defensemen they have coming in, Zadorov. You know, Grigorenko is kind of a enigma, but he's a guy that they have high hopes for. I happen to agree again with a lot that Al Muir said about the Buffalo Sabres. I think 3, 4, 5 years from now, this is a team that can be a playoff team and can be a playoff team that can actually go somewhere. So, you know, back to Ennis, though. I mean, Ennis has got great offensive skill, and he's basically had a revolving door of players mm-hmm. around him over the last couple of years. But this is a guy that has high-end talent, and I think, you know, with this contract, They've signed him to 5 years, and this is a guy they want to build around. And Cody Hodgins is another guy, you know, in his early 20s here. I think a couple years younger than Ennis, but another guy that or maybe they're only a 1 year difference there. We'll have to check that. But the two guys that are key parts of this team moving forward. And again, you know, you can bring in a Gionta and Molson. These are guys that are older, and those will be your guys that complement these players. But you know, yeah, and this contract's good. I saw this contract and it made sense to me, and you know, I'm with Richie. I've always been a fan of Ennis's game, and I think that he still hasn't reached his potential, to be honest with you.
Ennis is about 6 months older than Hodgson, so they're both okay, they're both so going to develop. Yeah. Like you said, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, these are two guys who are hopefully going to continue to develop and get better at the exact same time. You know, we talked about that.
I like Ennis better than I like Hodgson.
Yeah, I agree with you too. I thought and the Hodgson contract when they signed it, I thought most people thought he was overpaid. But if both those guys continue to develop, they're going to be doing so at the same time and creating a dynamic 1-2 punch for the Buffalo Sabres. Moving on to Florida, back to Florida, they had a couple signings this week. They re-signed RFA defenseman Dmitry Kulikov. 3 years, $13 million, average annual value of $4.33 million. They also re-signed RFA Brandon Peary, 2 years, $1.85 million, average annual value of $925,000. Start with Kulikov. This is a guy that supposedly was on the trade market last season. They give him 3 years and $13 million. Seems like a pretty decent decent amount of money for Kulikov.
Yeah, you know, Drew, Dmitry Kulikov, and this is an interesting contract. He has the exact same contractual situation that Tyler Ennis did. Now, they had a 3-year entry level deal, signed a bridge contract, 2 years, $5 million, and he's coming up on free agent, you know, an RFA status with arbitration rights. So that means that he's a UFA in 2 years. And so he signs 3 of those years away. So for the player, it's not bad. He's buying a 1 UFA year, but he's getting the security of 3 years. I think the Panthers, there might have been some concern at some point that he was going to go to Russia. But Kulikov, you know, sometimes may, you know, isn't the most physical guy. Sometimes makes weird decisions, but he does do two things well. He can skate well, and he can move the puck out of his own zone well. And probably they want him to quarterback the second unit, not the first unit, and having Ekblad there. And you know, is maybe, and Brian Campbell there, the pressure isn't on him to be able to have to create offensively. They want him to key the transition game. They want him to be the quick puck move out of the zone. And I think he does that quite well. Do I feel a little more comfortable about a 2-year deal? Because you're buying out the UFA year, I don't mind that you make it 3 years. You know, will he absolutely outperform this deal and look like great value? Probably not. Will he absolutely be awful and look at this as a terrible contract? Probably not as well. This is probably in the ballpark of where it ought to be. I don't have a huge issue with this deal for a guy who can play in your top four and can move the puck out of his own zone. So I think I have no issue with that.
And what you have to like here about Dmitry Kulikov is that he played in Russia during the lockout. They weren't sure what his future was. He was on the trading block, and now Dale Talon's managed to sign him for 3 years. So you have to like that they've managed to, obviously, sure, he's getting paid $4 million. So, but you have to like the fact that they have mended the differences that they had, because they didn't like what he was doing. And you remember he was benched last year for poor play and poor decision-making, and you have to like that they've got Branson under contract, Dylan Olsen, you know, Richie mentioned Campbell, but, you know, Kulikov's under 3 years here, and you know, a guy like Aaron Ekblad, they know that he's not going to come into the NHL and be a top-pairing defenseman. So, yeah, I like the contract. I think by giving him 3 years, you're saying, okay, we know kind of what your deficiencies are here, but we know that because you're only 23 years old, we still know that we have time to make you into a better defenseman. So, you know, I'm Kulikov, to me, I think there's potential there, but I think so far it's a little bit untapped.
Let's head to break. When we come back, Willie Donick, Nashville Predators play-by-play man, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The O'Legal Curve Hockey Show. The podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Welcome back to The O'Legal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at O'Legal Curve, Facebook.com/O'Legal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is O'LegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show, he is the Nashville Predators radio voice on 102.5 The Game, Willie Donick. Willie, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to be with you guys. Good morning to you.
Willie, wanted to start obviously with the big news out of Nashville earlier this week, the signings of Mike Ribeiro and Derek Roy, both to one-year contracts. Do the potential rewards from these contracts outweigh the risk, especially when it comes to signing a guy like Mike Ribeiro, who's had a bit of a checkered history in the last couple of years?
I think they do. I think if you look at where Nashville was with their forwards, they were, I think, in a position of need with both of those players. And I thought for a long time they would be looking at the Vinny LeCavalier situation in Philadelphia. And so when you look at what they got both Roy and Ribeiro for, and then you would add even Olli Jokinen to that, and you add up those salaries, what they'll pay for those three, and it adds up about to what you would pay for Vinny LeCavalier if you were to pay for his full salary. It's also what they've been paying David Legwand for the last 6 years. So I think the reward definitely outweighs the risk when you consider if even one or two of those players works well, they'll probably end up ahead of where they were before.
Now, how much credit, Willie, does David Poile get here in terms of adding those players, as you said, for that value? And also, you know, seemingly kind of changing, and obviously with the hire of Laviolette, that's been affected, but changing the type of player that he's bringing in to maybe try and create more offense than they have in the past.
Well, that was one of the things that David Poile said. And I think David Poile knows that for the first real time in his tenure in Nashville, and we're talking about a long period of time here, since 1998, from the very, very start, he's been here as the architect of this team. This is the most heat he's been under, without a doubt. And his goal was to overhaul the forwards. He just didn't feel like it was going to work in the way that they had been playing. A couple of years ago, in 2012, they had a very solid team with Pekka-Rinne was at the top of his game, and they had Ryan Suter and Shea Weber, and a lot of gritty forwards, perhaps, you know, hard work ethic, not a lot of skill and talent up front, but they were able to get to the second round of the playoffs, and they really felt like they had a good chance of beating Phoenix. They felt like they should have beaten Phoenix in a lot of ways in that second round, and it didn't happen. Everything sort of has unraveled a bit since then. And so I think they wanted to shake it up. That's why they changed coaches and brought Peter Laviolette in. And they have made no secret that they want to play more aggressively offensively. And that's why players like Ribeiro, Jokinen, James Neal, and Derek Roy have been brought in.
Willie, we were talking about this earlier in the show. Nashville Predators now have a glut of centermen with the acquisitions of Roy and Ribeiro. And our friend Josh Cooper of the Tennessean pointed out in an article for the Tennessean that they actually now have 10 players who have played center at some point in their career. So when you're talking about maybe a Matt Cullen or a Colin Wilson or other players, who do you think is maybe most likely to make the permanent switch to the wing position?
I think right now, if I had to guess, I think Cullen would play the wing. I think Jokinen would play the wing. And this is just, you know, going into training camp. I think one of the things that David Poile is trying to create is some options for the new coaching staff and Peter Laviolette to use in his system. Just because a guy may have played really well at center last year but can play wing, I mean, who knows how that's going to work with Laviolette. But I would guess right now that Ribeiro and Roy will occupy the top two center positions, at least to start, and because that's why they were brought in. I think Jokinen came in with the idea that he could play center or wing. Colin Wilson is a guy that's really interesting. They moved him to center last year, almost out of desperation when they had some injuries, and he played okay, but I didn't think he really seized the opportunity as well as he might have. And so I think right now he goes in, penciled in on the wing, going forward here. So I think your four centers to start would probably be Ribeiro, Roy, probably the youngster Callie Yarncroke, and then Paul Gostad.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Willie Donick. He's the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster on 102.5 The Game. Willie, you just mentioned him in answering that last question. Now that he might, you know, looks like he's going to be able to play for the team this year, how good does the David Legwand trade where the Predators acquired Cale Yarncroc look at this point?
It looks very good. If you went right down to the trading deadline, you weren't sure if David Legwand, who had a no-trade clause, was going to be moved at all. I mean, the Predators were more or less out of the race. They weren't completely out of it, but I think the time had come for David Legwand, who was the first ever draft pick for the team. It just seemed like it was the right time to move on. But at that point in time, I didn't think they'd be able to get something as good as a ready-made prospect like Cale Yarncroc. So they're really excited about how he has played since coming over. And not only that, but because the Red Wings made the playoffs, which was the reason that they wanted Legwand, is they wanted to make the playoffs. And even though they lost to Boston in the first round, Nashville's conditional pick moved from a third rounder to a second rounder. So they got an extra pick in the second round for Legwand, a guy that they were going to lose anyway. There was no way they were going to re-sign Legwand regardless. So to get an asset like that and then go back the year before to move another staple of the franchise in Marty Erad and get a high-rated prospect like Philip Forsberg, they played it very well at the trading deadline to get a pretty good return on two veterans.
You know, Willie, when I look at the Nashville team, Pierre Laviolette's going to come in, and he was in Philadelphia. They played kind of an open style. They wouldn't mind exchanging goals in a shootout, and he seems like he'd always be calling timeouts early in the game, get his team going. Is there any concern? It seemed to be an issue at the end of his Philadelphia tenure that the players they've brought in, say Ribeiro or Roy or Jokinen, whatever it may be, aren't at the top speed level to be able to play his style effectively?
Well, I think that's going to be a question mark, and you know, there's a reason why, and you know, Jokinen was signed on the second day of free agency. But let's take Roy and Ribeiro. Mm-hmm. For guys that have been as productive as they have, there's a reason where they were sort of sitting there and available for 1 year contracts. You know that there's some issues there, and so, in particular, in the case of Ribeiro, there was a long, long recruiting period in which Ribeiro really sought out Nashville. He really called up and said, I think I might be a fit here. He knew that James Neal had been signed. He had played and had success with Neal before. And he knew he almost had to sell Nashville on him getting over the issues. And that included a long chat and a night out at dinner with Peter Laviolette to discuss all these things and discuss with David Poile. So I do think those are major question marks that you brought up. But I think when you look at what Nashville had at forward, it was a gamble worth taking. And as we said before, it's a 1 year deal. So if it's you can cut bait probably at midway through the season if you had to, and move in a different direction, and you're probably no worse off than you were before. Mm-hmm.
Well, you look at this defense, and even with Michael Delzato leaving, it's still, in my opinion, an excellent defense group, and it will always be when you have Shea Weber there, and then you throw in Seth Jones, who's really, the sky is the limit for Seth Jones. You know, they go out and they acquire Anton Voljankov, who the New Jersey Devils did not want to re-sign. When you look at the D pairings going ahead next year, who do you think the top six D will be for the Nashville Predators? Is it still Josi and Weber together? And maybe where do you think Seth Jones will play?
I think for sure that Josi and Weber will play together. I thought that their chemistry as the year went on got very, very good, and by the end of the year, Roman Josi was playing outstanding hockey. I think he complements Weber very well with the right shot and the left shot. So I think you can definitely put those two down. After that, that's going to be the interesting thing to me, is where does Voljankov fit in? He fits well because he's a left-handed shot, and so I think he would be a good natural partner for Seth Jones. I think one of the keys is going to be where does Seth Jones where is his progress from year one to year two? He had some great moments last year. He had some flashes, and I think you guys might recall a goal he scored in Winnipeg where mm-hmm. he skated the length of the ice on the right wing, went around, wrapped it around. I mean, he had some flashes like that. He also was exploited a number of times with, you know, some giveaways that you would expect of trying to make hay playing 16 to 20 minutes, sometimes more 23, 24 minutes as a guy at 19. So how much of a leap can he make? I think that will determine where he plays, whether it's the second pair or the third pair. But I think Ryan Ellis is also a guy that made strides. I think you could see Volchenkov as the stay-at-home guy with Ellis, who's a little more dynamic and creative. And then Matthias Ekholm is another guy that is young, who they think hasn't really tapped his ceiling as well. But he, I think, matured a lot, has learned how to defend a little bit better, and I think probably has an opportunity to be a little more creative offensively now that he's sort of got his baseline in the defensive zone, because it took him a couple years before that. They've always thought he had a high ceiling, and not until sort of the last 20, 25 games last year did he start to come around. So those are the options. It'll be those six, without a doubt. And then Victor Barclay, I think, is a very solid number seven that that could fill in a number of spots.
Willie Donick is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is the Nashville Predators radio play-by-play broadcaster on 102.5 The Game. Willie, when you look at the Predators, I mean, we talked about Shea Weber and Seth Jones. Pekka Rinne is always such a key to the team. Of course, he only played in 24 games last year with the hip issues. You know, how is he going in his return to health, and do you think he can return to being an elite NHL goaltender?
Well, it's funny, we've obsessed here in Nashville about, they've got to find a way to score more goals. They never score enough goals, all of that. But really, when you look at last year, in my mind, the number one reason that they were not successful was they gave up way too many goals. And Pekka missing 51 games is where you start. But I think overall, that's going to be, I think, in general, they should score enough to be successful if they can play the kind of defense and get the kind of goaltending that this franchise has been used to at the top. So Pekka, when he got back, he had some ups and downs. He showed that he could play at a high level at times. He had a couple of wins on the road. For example, he won late in the season at Chicago and really played very well. He also had some struggles. But I think what makes people feel the most optimistic is he went over to the World Championships and he played very, very well for Team Finland. And so he'll get a chance to come into training camp, hopefully without any issues. I think you probably look down the road and you wonder, okay, how many miles does he have left on the tires? Can he play the full length of his long-term contract? But I think in the next year or two, I think there's every belief that he can play at that Vezina level that he was at before the injury.
Willie, I want to ask you about Philippe Forsberg. He played a little bit in Nashville last year. He was, of course, acquired from the Washington Capitals in the ERAT trade. I know Peter Laviolette's answers to the questions about Forsberg were a little bit funny when he said the expectations, you know, you got to be careful with the expectations of the young player. But is the expectation, do you believe that he can play a full-time role in the NHL, or is it possible that he plays a little bit in the AHL or a full year in the AHL and maybe he's another year away still from being a player that the Nashville Predators, use on a full-time basis?
It's a question that's been asked a lot. He was here for the prospect camp last week. I got a chance to talk to him, watch him. He's put on some weight, which is the important thing. I think they probably, in retrospect, did him a disservice. They were so thin at forward when they traded for him for Martin Erat, and there was a lot of headlines to that trade. Hey, first-round pick, this guy can help us. He's got the skill that this franchise has lacked. But I think at the end of the day, even though Seth Jones was ready to play, Philip Forsberg just physically wasn't quite ready. They feel like he will get there. He's got some things that I think will play very, very well, particularly his release of his shot. That's really hard to teach. It's just a matter for him of getting stronger and also playing at the speed that you have to play to get it done in North America. Overseas, he's admitted that you've got a little more time, that this extra second or two that you have to make your play, he's had trouble with that. People are on him quicker, and he just hasn't been able to make the pass get free. So whether he's ready to play this year or not, I think what they've done in these signings is create a situation where he doesn't have to be relied on this year. He may indeed, through injuries, through opportunities, maybe he creates them, maybe just so good that they can't keep him out of the lineup. But I like how they set it up to where he's still just 20 years old. If it doesn't happen this year, I think they want to give him enough time to reach his potential, which they think is very high.
Final question for you, Willie. You know, here in Winnipeg, we talk about the Jets and the possible chances of making the playoffs. Some think that Nashville, with these moves, has surpassed the Jets in terms of being a better team than them in the division, at least, although it's a very tough division. Do you think this Nashville squad, as currently constructed, can make the playoffs?
I think they can, but I think I'm sure we're saying here in Nashville the same thing you guys are saying in Winnipeg is this division is brutal. Every single team brings something to the table, and not everybody can make it. I looked at this team last year where the Predators were, and I think if you looked at the two rosters, opening day last year, opening day this year, you feel way better about this year's team. Mm-hmm. But and last year I thought, okay, you even looked at some publications who do the predictions that are unbiased, and you had Nashville in the mix there for a playoff spot, but that was because people weren't sure about Minnesota. They certainly didn't see what was happening in Denver and them having the season they had. So now, especially with those two teams added to Chicago and St. Louis, I mean, it's brutal. So how are you going to make it in? You're going to have to knock somebody out that's a pretty good hockey team. But I think on paper, I think they have a formula that can be successful if things fall right.
Willie Donick is the Nashville Predators radio play-by-play voice on 102.5 The Game in Nashville. Willie, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Anytime, guys.
Take
glad
care.
To join you.
Thanks very much, Willie. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment on this Saturday morning. Little Bruce Springsteen brings us back from commercial break.
Do you Big know what song this is?
I'm sorry?
You know what song this is?
If I hear a little more, but you know I never know the names of the songs. I have heard it.
I'm just putting you on the spot.
Yeah, I know. It's unfair of you.
This is a little bit like a different type of Bruce. Like
this
a little
his first album. Yeah. 1969, yeah. I believe.
Yeah, I was 20.
I'd like to hear more like Bruce songs like this. Like
Big thank
you. You know what I mean? Like there's
this
like
is my favorite album, the first album.
Yeah.
Greetings from Asbury Park. Right.
Big thank you to Willie Donick, Nashville Predators radio play-by-play voice. Earlier in the show, I had said that the podcast wouldn't be up until Monday or so.
M. Remus.
I got to give props to Mr. Remus. He surprisingly popped in to the studio. I was surprised to see him. He's delayed his trip out for his romantic weekend with the lady friend. He's delayed his trip by about an hour so he can put the show up in podcast form. So it'll be ready just a few minutes after we get off the air here. So props to Remus for that.
Props to at M. Remus.
I told Remus, like, he needs to, like, blog about this weekend with Leah.
Well,
like,
fortunately, he's got a website. He can do that, mremus.ca.
Yeah. Like, I want to see pictures. I want to see, like, see video, audio. Like
audio. Like, podcast. Do you want a podcast?
I need to know everything about this weekend. Like, this, because it's not just Remus's girlfriend's parents that are going. It's also the brother and the I guess that's Remus's sister-in-law.
Or brother-in-law and
brother-in-law,
sister-in-law.
Brother-in-law, yeah. Like, Leah's brother is the brother-in-law, sister-in-law.
Yeah, he's freaking out over there on the other side of the glass, so yeah.
Well, we'll have him on next week, because next week is your birthday and you're taking a vacation.
Yeah,
well,
you're taking Saturday
off. I'm having my annual house party, so I mean, I'm...
You want to share the address with everybody so that the public can be invited?
Just to let our listeners know, Ezzy is taking next week's show off, and similar to last year when we called Ezzy... And he took the same weekend off.
Yeah.
He was in his backyard listening to the show.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Yeah.
Only a 10-minute drive from the studio.
No.
Well, come on. I mean,
you're entitled to the week off. Nobody's going to give you any criticism. I need one week off,
guys. I mean, I do radio every week. Like, is it so much that I get my birthday off? I mean, Richie, like, it's like, you know, I'm asking for like a month off.
Now,
it's just...
your birthday and my dad's birthday are a day apart. So you guys having a joint house party? Is that what's happening? Do you know,
well,
have you guys?
I don't know what you're getting at with joint, Drew, but I don't think that I'm definitely not opposed to doing something with Sheldon.
Yeah, you should probably talk.
Like,
to
maybe
him,
we could do a brunch.
Yeah, that'd be nice. The two of you should go for brunch together.
Yeah. Do a little brunch or, you know, maybe go to a movie.
Some mimosas for the two of you. That'd be very nice. That'd be very good. Anyways, boys, Tom Rennie was hired as the new president of Hockey Canada. We only have 2 minutes to talk about it. So do you want to hold on to that till next week?
Hopefully we have something to talk about next week. Let's hold on to it.
You'll have Remus's
recap of your birthday party, and then we'll have Remus on to talk about his weekend.
Let's quickly talk about the New York Islanders then. They made two signings this week. They re-signed RFA Casey Cizikas, 2 years, $2 million.
Really like Cizikas. Yeah.
I like him too.
And they re-signed defenseman Calvin DeHaan, 3 years, $5.9 million.
Which I think, before we're done here, is actually funny, because last week I said I thought Calvin DeHaan would be a big factor in whether
this team takes that next step because they need him to solidify their top four. And as he mentioned, right after I said that, as he mentioned, how Casey Cizikas is a nice complimentary player on the bottom of their roster. And I think both of those things are true.
Both guys, by the way, that were good players for Canada at the World Junior Tournament several years back. But no, I like what the Islanders are doing. I think the Islanders had a rough year missing out on the playoffs last year, but Cizikas is that good bottom six center for you, plays a tough, like they call it sandpaper type of game. And then DeHaan is a guy, they're actually talking about, you know, because DeHaan is playing so well, you know, that it's going to be tough for younger players to make the team. But I those are good signings, and I like where the Islanders are going.
That's it for us this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. Big thank you to our guests, Willie Donick, the play-by-play voice of the Nashville Predators, and Al Muir of Sports Illustrated. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website, as I said, is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Tim and producer Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.